This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of our podcast series, Better Ways to Train on Litigation Support and eDiscovery Applications. My name is Jillian Glass. I'm Director of Legal Services at Ferrella Braun Martell, a law firm in San Francisco. Christy, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Jillian. My name is Christy Wibzar, and I'm the eDiscovery Services Manager, Review Center Manager. It's a really long title, at Holland & Knight. I've been with the firm for more than 20 years. I started as a litigation paralegal, and because I was more technically inclined, I moved into IT training and user support for about 10 years, and then as a result of the Great Recession, ended up in eDiscovery, and I've been part of our eDiscovery group, or lit support, as it was known. For about 10 years. As with most people in eDiscovery, I just sort of fell into it, but it's been a very interesting journey for sure. And I started out as a project manager, and now I'm, again, the manager of our document review center. So that's where I am.
Oh, okay, great. How many people are in your lit support department at Holland & Knight, and how many contract reviewers do you have?
Sure. So we have, I think, 8 project managers spread out across the entire firm in various offices. We also have an operations team that has, I think, 5 people that help support the project managers. We have a client solutions manager who is in charge of all the project managers, and we have an operations manager who handles our operations team as well as our litigation, who oversees the legal document reviews, and we all work very closely with the project managers as well.
So okay.
It's a big and growing group.
Yeah, so it's a big and growing group, but you're primarily the one who does training for your end users. Which programs do you train on?
So we primarily train on Relativity. That is our main document review platform, and that's generally what we do all of our training on. We have some additional programs like Case Notebook and Trial Director that we train on an as-needed basis, but otherwise most of our time is focused on Relativity, trying to get our users up to speed. The program itself, as many people probably know, is very user-friendly. So we can train people on just the basics if that's all they need, and we can take them all the way through the advanced functions. Most of the project managers and myself are Relativity certified admins, so we have a pretty deep understanding of the platform and all of its functionality, although I feel like I'm learning something new almost every day. You know, hands-on is a great way to learn, but also, you know, I reach out to colleagues as well to sort of learn tips and tricks from them, or if there's some functionality that I don't use regularly, then, you know, they're typically pretty happy to share it. So that's generally how we do it.
When you get a new class of associates in, or when you have laterals come over, is training them on Relativity or other lit support apps part of the standard orientation process, or is it done more on a case-by-case basis?
It tends to be more on a case-by-case basis. This is something we are really trying to push for, where we're getting people as they come in the door so that they know we are a resource. But a lot of our training tends to be on demand and as needed, and as cases ramp up. It also helps because then we can tailor the training more to the users themselves and what they're trying to accomplish and their data set, because while Relativity is internal to Holland & Knight, and so we have, you know, set workflows and standard templates, so we do have a consistent user experience. But again, with each case, you have variations, and so we try to customize it as needed, you know, based on the case, based on, you know, the whatever is happening in that particular case, what they're trying to accomplish, so that they're getting the most they can out of both the Relativity and how we're presenting it to them also.
In terms of paralegals and other staff coming in the door, is that also the same where you're training them case by case, or?
Yeah, generally it's on a case by case basis also. We do, you know, if someone reaches out and asks for dental training, and this happened just recently too, they have a few questions and they're fairly new to the firm, you know, we'll try to, again, catch them pretty early on and give them a general overview. I generally like to do smaller training sessions really tailored to either the team or individuals, because then they also feel you're generally more comfortable in asking questions and trying to get their questions answered. And it really ends up being more of a conversation and a dialogue rather than just one person showing the other person what to do and explaining all of it. Although the explanation obviously is part of it, but it's really better if they are engaged and feel like they can ask questions throughout the training. And I find that the smaller sessions tend to accomplish that a little bit better, I think.
So generally you'd prefer to do kind of a smaller group one-on-one. I know you guys are spread out across a lot of offices. Is that, you know, do you have a specific technical setup you use to kind of bridge those geographical gaps?
Yeah. Our
do you travel ever?
We don't travel a whole lot, but our team is distributed in most of our offices. So to the extent that people can do one-on-one sessions in person, you know, that's usually the optimum way to go. Unfortunately, it's not always possible just, again, because we're distributed. So, you know, a project manager may be in Chicago, but their legal team they're working with might be in Orlando. So we generally do virtual meetings, and we use either Adobe Connect or Zoom. Adobe Connect is great for sort of a preset class, you know, training that we've scheduled. Last year, we did these 10-minute trainings where we had 10 minutes of content, sometimes a little bit more than that, and then about 10 to 15 minutes of questions, answers, you know, and follow-up, so that we weren't taking more than about a half an hour. For that, we used Adobe Connect because we linked in our IT training department, and they handled all the technical side of it, registering people, sending out the notices, and all of that stuff. So all we had to do was actually present the content, you know, put together our slides and our script and everything. For more of the on-demand, you know, just-in-time training, we will generally use Zoom. And Zoom is great because you've got a video component if you want. Generally, we keep that off, but we can do a screen share. And you can also record it. And the recording part of it is really helpful so that if we need to repeat that for, let's say, the review team, we need to repeat it for new reviewers, we can do that. So we've only had Zoom for probably, I'd say, less than a year, but it's absolutely fantastic just because of that recording feature. I really like it. And you can also annotate your screen and stuff too. So if you are sharing your screen, you can then draw on it also. So little tools like that are actually pretty cool. So that's what we generally use. You know, it's funny because, again, I like to have, you know, one-on-one or maybe two, three, four people or something. I think that tends to work better, especially if it's customized for their particular case. You know, once you get into a higher number of attendees, then you lose some of that personalization. And,
right. You know
people are zooming, are zoning out, and you also have a much wider range of abilities. So it's a little bit harder to gauge, okay, am I really capturing what they need to know? But on the one hand, you know, you're always trying to come up with at least a few things that people, no matter their ability, haven't seen before, so that they can take away and start using immediately. And, you know, for those people that are maybe newer and not as experienced, you know, well, here's a few things that, you know, you can sort of work up to. We try to balance it.
Is there some kind of limit? I was wondering when you were talking about these Adobe Connect sessions, did you cap the number of people that could attend at any given time to keep it manageable, or?
We didn't. So the way we worked it is, I want to say the highest number we had for attendance was about 40. So
Whoa,
we got,
that's actually, a lot.
I thought it was great. It did drop over time, but I thought our attendance actually was really good. Part of that is because we tried to keep them short. We understand people's time is valuable, and we kept them very focused. And if they wanted to drop off after the first 10 minutes of content, then they had that opportunity. But we don't cap it. But what we did to try to get people to interact is we did leave it open for questions at the end. And so if people wanted to either ask their questions, or they could also type it into a chat box. And so that did engage some people, and I think that worked. I will say, we also did plant some questions too. So the project
that's a good one.
Team, yeah. So the project manager's team would get the script beforehand. This is distributed across the different project managers. So each person took like one or two topics. You know, we put together a script and, you know, have all the examples and stuff set up, distribute it to the rest of the project managers for comments, see if anything should be added or taken out or clarified. And then the presenter would go through the material, and then we would generally have, you know, two, three, maybe four questions kind of lined up. And those questions might be to go into more detail maybe on something that they couldn't cover during the initial topic, or maybe to clarify something that didn't quite come out maybe the way the presenter had hoped to. And so that kind of kept the dialogue going a little bit, and I thought that was useful. And sometimes, of course, you know, actual users did supply some questions too, which was good.
Yeah. I think we found with ILTA presentations that people are much more comfortable typing questions in the chat box sometimes than they are speaking. So I think that's a good tip for users. In terms of, you know, we've talked a lot about screen sharing, and I think even when you're training someone in person, it's really hard to know sort of, you know, how much a person can learn from watching you do something versus sitting with them and struggling with them and having them now click here, now click here, now click there. Where do you think the balance is on that? Do you try to get your users to do everything?
Well, not generally if we're doing like an actual training session. However, we can still use Zoom or Skype to do a more one-on-one session where we can then shadow them and walk them through the different steps. So, you know, that might be a separate thing, or it might be a follow-up to, you know, say a class on searching or something like that, where we can interact with our users one-on-one, do a share screen, they're sharing their screen with us, and then we can walk them through whatever steps they need. I always think it's better if the individual actually does it. That's how I learn. That's how a lot of people learn, mm-hmm. by actually doing. You know, talking at people is good if you need to, you know, to do it to a big group and across a wide geographic distribution, but you know, people are definitely going to remember it more if they can actually do it.
And are you usually logged in as that user too? I think that's one thing that we've struggled with is, you know, setting an account that looks like not what I look like as an administrator, what they look like as an end user.
Yes, when we're doing a demonstration like we did for our 10-minute training, we were logged in as the user, so, or as a representative user, so that they were seeing exactly what they would see at their own desk. So they're not going to see all of the extra stuff that we have and the permissions that we have. Okay. So yeah, that's definitely the way to go. If we're doing something on the fly, then generally we're not going to log in as a generic user unless it's appropriate. And particularly for our purposes, if it's for an external team. So if it's for
clients,
or if it's for co-counsel or somebody else who might have restricted permissions, then yes, you would absolutely only log in based on their level of permission. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about how you prepare and sort of what kind of materials you have, you know, sort of canned and ready to go versus what you have to develop on the fly. Do you have a set of scripts? Do you have that sort of organized and you say, okay, now we're teaching people, you know, this is a straightforward document review, or this is a review of incoming productions, or this is some weird thing where they have to redact and that's all they're doing? Or is it that customized, or is it just sort of a general, here's how you log in, here's how you find your case?
For our document reviews in particular, we're pretty customized based on the type of review it is. So if, and that is generally done on the fly. I mean, every one of our project managers, myself, we can all jump in and say, provide whatever instructions necessary, but it's based on the case. So we might have a review team doing redactions, then yes, we would absolutely go through and show them exactly what they need to do, which redaction setting, what the text is going to be, which coding layout to use, what buttons they need to click, etc. Because it, depending on what kind of a review they're doing, their instructions will be different. And we want everybody to be very consistent about what they're doing. And the only way for that to happen is for us to tell them, here's what you're going to do. You know, if it's an incoming production review, we have a separate layout for that. We need to instruct them very specifically, here's your coding layout, here are your tags, this is what you're going to use. And so we are very specific about that. We don't want to leave anything up to chance. We also have a wide variety of not just coding layouts, but also document views. So even once you, let's say, checked out a batch, you know, you could pick from one of four different document views to view your batch. And so we want this to be as efficient as possible for everyone. And so we will instruct them on which view to use for that as well. This way everybody is following the same steps. And so we don't lose people. They're not coding the wrong thing. They're not coding in the wrong field, et cetera. So yeah, we're very specific about our instruction.
So that's great. So you develop it and then the project managers follow it, basically?
Yes. Yeah, the project managers and the review team. And it varies as to who actually provides the instruction. I do a lot of it.
Okay.
So you are project managers as well. It's part of it depends on who's available and in what capacity. Yeah.
Right. But no, that's inspiring to hear. Do you have a lot of written materials, help sheets? Is that something that you sort of amassed a library of? Do you customize those for every project, or can you just, do you have enough now? You can just say, this one, it's that one. And then also, how do you handle when there's incremental updates to the screens? Because that's something we've noticed is like, oh, you used version 8 print screens here. And
yeah, documentation is always an issue. It's for our document reviews, we drop in some screenshots into our document review protocol, and that is part of our document kickoff call where we are instructing them. So they do have some current and up-to-date screenshots as to, you know, this is the coding layout you're going to be in, these are the tags you're going to be using. As far as other sort of quick reference guides, things like that, you know, we do develop them occasionally, but then they go out of date. So I tend to rely on the canned stuff from Relativity. I mean, I did documentation for years and spent an extraordinary amount of time on it, and a lot of people just don't look at it. So I tend to like the 1 to 2 page quick reference guide. I actually keep the searching guide handy. That's the one thing I have printed out stuck on my bulletin board. But most people, they're going to look at a 1 or 2 page guide. They might keep that handy. And anything else, for the most part, you can look up. And so we will give them links to resources, links to, you know, webinars that they can view on their own, links to quick reference guides, things like that. So, you know, we do some internally, but we also do definitely rely on some of the standard Relativity materials because they do have quite a bit.
That's great. And also, I guess I would just direct everyone that, yeah, if you're looking for Relativity training materials, Relativity has posted a ton of them on their own site, and anyone can log in and get those. You don't need to be a Relativity shop. And they are kind of amazing when you see how much work they put into them.
They are. They've got, well, and that's the other thing is that Relativity has put a lot of time and effort into creating these materials. And so it's kind of like, well, we could do the same, but it's already here. So let's leverage that.
So one of the questions I think is interesting is as eDiscovery moves into more, you know, using AI and predictive coding and technology assisted review, is that we're now tasked to with maybe explaining more technically complex concepts to our end users than something, you know, versus responsive or non-responsive. You're now talking about, you know, I mean, I hope not precision and recall because I can never keep those straight, but, you know, more technical, more jargon. Do you have any tips on sort of explaining technical things to non-technical people? What works well for you?
I wish I had a great answer for this. I think what we do is we start introducing the terminology early and often, and we keep putting it out there. So eventually, you know, maybe by the fifth time they hear of it and they hear the explanation, it starts to sink in as to, okay, what does this actually mean? And I know the project managers will certainly take time to explain, okay, this is what we're doing with TAR, this is your involvement, this is what it does, and our team is very good about boiling it down to bullet points that anyone can understand, you know, and if some of our attorneys, they just dive right in and they get it and they're with you all the way, and others, you know, you have to repeat yourself a few times and explain it a second and third time as to, okay, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it. Generally for something like, you know, threading or TAR or continuous active learning, if you give them big picture and say, okay, well, the goal here is that we're not going to have to review as many documents, we're not going to produce as many documents, and it's going to lower our costs, that usually makes them invested in learning more about it and understanding how it works so that they can then explain it to somebody else. And, you know, once you have them invested, then Yep, they're on board, and they will ask whatever questions they need to ask until they actually understand it. Generally, starting at the end with the result and the goal, the product, is a good way to get them on board to make them want to learn it. And so that gives them a little bit of motivation in life.
I think that's great. So probably the last question I have is, what do you do with people who just will not attend training? Is there anything you can do, seeing as how you're not a partner?
Right. Well, that's a really good question, because, you know, there are kind of two types of people, I think, generally when it comes to training: those who want to learn and those who don't really want to learn. And I will always take the person who wants to learn. It doesn't matter where they are as far as their understanding. If they're interested and they want to, that's great. Like, we can work with that. If you have no interest, or if you think, I don't need to know this, that's a lot harder to counteract. And if you can give them, you know, these are the people who don't come to training, if you can give them a reason to care, and generally it comes down to money, then that might help bring them on board. You know, if this process is going to save the client money and, you know, save the firm money, it will make your review go faster, it will make your productions go faster, then they will start to hopefully listen. And we have people who don't know the details, but eventually they understand the big picture. And at the very least, they know, okay, we need to go to the e-discovery team for this. I'm not going to ask for all of these items to be printed out. I know you're going to make it more efficient, and we'll save the client money. So, you know, if you can make baby steps in that direction, you know, that's great. You can't expect somebody to go from not knowing anything about, you know, our Relativity platform to being an expert. Like, it doesn't work that way. But if you can at least get them on board with using it, okay, great. And then maybe send them a link, and then maybe sort of, again, bring them on gradually. You know, you feel like you're making progress at least. There's hope. There's always hope.
Yeah. So I guess that's another question then. Do you track who's attended what training? Do you guys have a database or anything for that? Or so you kind of know where people are and who needs help, or?
We do have an internal learning portal where, like, our subscription, not subscription, but those trainings that we offer to our IT training team, those are tracked and recorded. And that is, I believe, plugged into a database. For all of our on-the-fly training or, you know, case-related training, we don't track that. That's certainly something that we could consider. A lot of these types of sessions are pretty short,
right?
But that's not a bad idea. Why not?
Yeah, it just popped into my head. So, oh, we should do that.
Sure.
We're a much smaller firm. Okay, well, thank you very much. This is super informative. And thank you to all of our listeners for attending. And I hope you listen to the other podcasts in the series.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.